Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. Thyroid disorders or low thyroid function is often the last place a physician looks at when a patient fails to thrive. Odd, since replacing thyroid hormone is usually inexpensive and its addition has profound effects on everything else. Since the thyroid gland is responsible for producing a hormone that conducts and maintains metabolism, the function of all other hormones are affected when it's out of balance. Additionally, mood, the health of the gut, temperature regulation, the heart, and circulatory system are all under its spell. Why is it then so hard for patients to get their thyroids thoroughly worked up whenever they're suffering from depression, cold, low immunity, constipation, reflux, IBS, dry skin and hair, and even hair loss? Today I'll be teaching you about your thyroid, including what usually goes wrong with it and why, and what tests should be run, and considerations for choosing a thyroid hormone replacement. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett, Ph.D.
Thank you, Elena. When is a disease not a disease? When it's a risk factor. Huge amounts of money are spent on treating people who are not ill. Although not ill, these people have risk factors that are treated as though they were a disease, because medical science believes that if you have, for example, high LDL cholesterol, you are more likely to have a heart attack. High LDL cholesterol is not a disease, nor is low HDL cholesterol, hypertension, insulin resistance, high triglycerides, high body mass index, or excess abdominal fat. I mention these in particular because they are the criteria used to diagnose metabolic syndrome, a disease that isn't a disease that's getting a lot of attention these days. One recent report from Medco, the nation's largest prescription drug manager, estimates that over 43% of patients have metabolic syndrome at an average cost of over $4,000 per year. Medco came up with these numbers not by looking at diagnoses, but by looking at what drugs people are taking. And this is because, as described in a New York Times article, metabolic syndrome is underdiagnosed, at least so far as the National Institutes of Health and the experts quoted for the Times article are concerned. Both the Medco report and the experts are part of a drumbeat for increased attention to metabolic syndrome because it is a harbinger of illness, and expensive ones at that. People with metabolic syndrome are said to be more likely to suffer a heart attack, stroke, complications from type 2 diabetes and obesity, kidney and liver failure, polycystic ovaries, and sleep apnea. Let's go back to risk factors. The idea is prevention. By reducing a risk factor now, you reduce your chances of becoming ill later. This is a good idea. To grossly oversimplify, metabolic syndrome is a consequence of starch and stress on people whose individual biology is susceptible to the disruptions associated with the syndrome. Most conventional scientists acknowledge that the best treatment for metabolic syndrome is so-called lifestyle changes that reduce exposure to starch and stress. How is conventional medicine approaching this problem, a problem that is getting more and more attention? Health practitioners can't reduce your exposure to starch and stress, but they can increase your exposure to pharmaceuticals believed to counter the effects of starch and stress. What I want to alert you to is that this diagnosis, this disease that is not a disease, is coming at you. It's certainly coming at you if you're middle-aged. And an aggressive campaign is brewing to screen people at a younger and younger age. So if you're a young adult, it's coming at you, too, and at your children. And with the diagnosis, drugs will be coming at you as treatment. To state the obvious, there's a better answer. Reduce your exposure to starch and stress. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Jeffrey is a political economist, a writer, and a health strategies advisor who works with me on the Progressive Health Observer, a news commentary alternative to big box medicine. In addition to his work on the newsletter, he works with people making healthcare decisions. You can reach him by going to our website to the consultation page or calling 707-874-1496. And now let's get further into our show about the thyroid. Now, your thyroid gland is a very small butterfly gland. It's butterfly-shaped at the base of your neck. But it's a very big subject to talk about. I'm going to try to be selective about what I talk about, so I won't be able to talk about every nuance to this issue of thyroid. But still, there are some preliminary principles that can be applied when considering it as a source of symptoms. Now, all chronic illness has remarkably similar symptoms. If you read a list of symptoms for almost any chronic illness and you're not well, you'll probably think that you have that illness. So in the same way, the thyroid, since it's so central to everything about the way people function, is going to have a set of symptoms that, although unique to thyroid, may also be present with other chronic illnesses. But here's the list. If these symptoms are present, the first thing to check is the thyroid. Fatigue. And we're talking about not cyclic fatigue, but just fatigue that's pretty much there all the time. Dry hair and skin. Facial edema, that means swelling, and puffiness around the eyes or dark circles around the eyes. Hair loss. Cold body temperature, especially the extremities. The hands and feet are very cold. But there's also a heat intolerance. Depression, anxiety, but mostly depression, sex hormone deficiency symptoms like menstrual problems or even missed periods, infertility, erectile dysfunction, lots of digestive symptoms like primarily constipation, but sometimes irritable bowel, gas, reflux, and a whole raft of circulatory problems like blood pressure problems, very low or high, heart problems. Now, doctors don't go to thyroid partially because when you actually look at the research on thyroid, it's a little confounding. It, as is often the case with lots of research, if you look at a whole bunch of research, I looked at approximately, well, I didn't look at all 337 studies that I was able to pull up, but I probably looked at 200 of them, you know, scanned them. And I saw them contradicting each other, you know, so you have to really dig into research. And then, of course, you have to see what research is actually hitting the doctors. What are they seeing? But they tend not to look at it also because the science of endocrinology, the study of hormones, is a relatively new science. And most physicians, most general practitioners don't have a lot of they haven't been taught a great deal about endocrinology. They know some very simple things about it. And so it can be a little confusing. And there's also been a lot of attention paid to a small number of research projects that showed primarily that when people are hyperthyroid, when they have like Graves' disease or a transient hyperthyroid from Hashimoto's thyroiditis, that they have a great deal of bone loss during that time when the thyroid gland is pumping out a lot of thyroid. In addition, there have been a few research projects that showed that when people were overdosed, or in other words, were given very large doses of thyroid hormone, which is in fact a bioidentical hormone, incidentally, this is not a medication, that they suffered bone loss too. But there are a lot of different things that you have to be thinking about when you look at these studies. There are other reasons for bone loss. There are other sympathetic reasons why someone with thyroid would be losing bone. And in fact, when I went to the textbook, Basic and Clinical Endocrinology by Greenspan and Struhler, which is sort of one of the textbooks that's used in the study of endocrinology, they reassure doctors that treating at physiologic doses, in other words, checking free T4, and I'll go over testing in a bit, and keeping that within the physiologic dose, and you know the range, which I will talk to you about in a moment, that there's really not any significant evidence of bone loss. And as I would say, there's also, if you're not looking at the overall nutritional density of the person, including vitamin D, which has which is important with people with thyroid problem, then, you know, there may be other reasons for bone loss. So doctors have become very nervous about treating with thyroid. They're also very nervous about giving it to elderly patients, because if you overdose somebody on thyroid, you get heart palpitations. But in fact, there are also studies that show that if people have insufficient thyroid concentrations, that they are more likely to have heart failure. There was a study done in March 05 that was reported on in the American Journal of Medicine, the title of which is Low Serum. Well, actually, it's going to be confusing if I read the whole thing, but it's T3 levels. Concentrations are a predictor of mortality in patients with heart failure, and they were checking to see that. So there's a kind of fear with doctors, and they don't really know what to do with it. And I don't think that pharmaceutical companies push thyroid hormone, which they call medication, but it's hormone, very often either, because it's not a big moneymaker for them. They can't patent thyroid products because they are bioidentical and it's a natural product. So you may have a doctor who's reluctant to look at this as a cause, and you may have to be the person that encourages the doctor to do it. The first thing that you want to have done is you want a doctor to feel the gland, and you yourself don't want to reach down in the base of your neck and start squeezing your gland, because it's a very delicate tissue. And if you do have any kind of inflammation in there and you start mushing around with your thyroid gland, you will irritate it. In fact, if you do have antibodies attacking your thyroid, which is a remarkably common problem, especially among women, and a doctor does a particularly aggressive palpation of your thyroid, it can cause some symptoms afterwards. So don't do this yourself, but have a doctor check it. If it feels enlarged or it's grainy or lumpy, they should do a test to rule out the presence of autoimmune antibodies attacking the gland. Now, this condition called thyroiditis, also called Hashimoto's, named after the person who invented it, is often missed because doctors will just order blood work, and they'll just order a very simple blood test, which is called a TSH, which tests thyroid-stimulating hormone, which is what your brain thinks is going on. It's your pituitary producing a hormone to stimulate thyroid function. And they'll look at that, and that's all they'll do. Or maybe they'll do a free T4, but sometimes they'll just do a TSH, and it'll look normal. Because somebody can have antibodies attacking the thyroid, and for a while, the levels of thyroid hormone will look normal, or they'll be maybe just slightly low. But in fact, what's happening is that the thyroid gland is inflamed, and it will cause a lot of symptoms. Well, what's going on with thyroiditis? This very common problem, and it's like, you know, one man to four women have it. So it's more common in women. It probably has something to do with the presence of estrogen maybe being unbalanced with progesterone, although I can't give you hard evidence of that. What is it? The body thinks the thyroid is something that it needs to attack and destroy. Autoimmunity, as you know, runs it runs in kind of groups. In other words, if someone has thyroid antibodies, they may also have antibodies attacking their joints, or their connective tissue, like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. In fact, if somebody ends up with a positive ANA, which is an antibody level, you know, checking for the presence of an autoimmune disease, and they're diagnosed with lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, it's often a good idea to check for thyroid antibodies as well. And when the thyroid is inflamed, you are getting an uneven delivery of thyroid hormone. The gland is very stressed. If somebody with thyroiditis, with this antibody reaction attacking, is exposed to pollutants or allergens, or is exposed to a great deal of stress, the symptoms, the thyroid symptoms will get worse. The person will get a scratchy throat. They'll feel hoarse. They'll feel anxious or depressed and exhausted and maybe speedy at the same time. This condition can also cause a kind of allergic overload because, as one doctor who specializes in treatment of Hashimoto's has said, it's like having an allergy to strawberries and having a strawberry in your neck. So people with autoimmune thyroiditis or even lupus and RA will often end up having multiple chemical sensitivities, which is actually a kind of mild poisoning reaction because the liver is not clearing things out pretty quickly, so you get a bioaccumulation. They may also have food allergies, so they may be very sensitive to any kind of allergic problem because the thyroid is contributing an allergic load. As I said, the hormone levels may fluctuate wildly, or they may just get progressively lower. And what may happen over time is that the thyroid will become so enlarged you end up with a goiter, and the thyroid function can become low. Now, there are people who don't go on to have their thyroids completely destroyed by thyroiditis, and their antibody levels may in fact even drop with time. The thing to watch for is just to make sure that the thyroid itself on palpation doesn't feel enlarged and that the patient isn't suffering from a number of symptoms. Some of them are even headache symptoms and things. And if that's the case, it's always good to rework up the thyroid to be sure that if it happened in the past, that it's not happening again. Again, remember, people under stress often are much more susceptible to autoimmune problems of all sorts. Now, another cause for Hashimoto's may be this issue of estrogen to progesterone ratio. It does, as I say, appear more often in women than it does in men, and it is thought that too much estrogen somehow interferes at the receptor level with thyroid. So progesterone tends to make thyroid work better in patients where there's too much estrogen to progesterone. When you add in progesterone, it sometimes potentiates the thyroid and helps it to work on the receptor level better. You're listening to your own health and fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show alone today that I'm calling Another Thyroid Show about why it is that people have such a hard time getting doctors to treat their thyroids and look at their thyroids as an underlying beginning thing to check when people are ill, chronically ill, or just not feeling well. Another thing to do is to begin to test the thyroid hormone levels. Even if the gland feels normal, you still want to see if people are actually producing enough thyroid hormone. Now, one of the things that makes testing a little tricky is that the ranges that you see at the lab represent a range that lab has seen among its patient population. So every lab that you go to will have a slightly different range. This doesn't mean that there's a difference in the assay that they're using. It really means that that's what they see as normal. And you will also notice that the range is enormous, like a range for TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. This is produced by the pituitary. It may go, you know, it may be a kind of common range for a sensitive TSH, ultra-sensitive test, which is sort of the new test that's being done, is like a 0.35 to like 5.5. Well, that's a very big change. That's like saying, you know, a 0.35 is 35 tenths compared to... I'm probably saying this wrong because I'm absolutely pathological with math, but... anyway, it's 0.35 to 5.5. So you can see that that's an enormous range. Now, TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, gets high when your thyroid is underproducing. So if you see yourself progressing on each test to a higher number, then you have some sense that your thyroid function is going down if your pituitary is performing normally. The other problem with these testing ranges is that you are actually trying to treat a human being, not a test. And since the range is so variable and so broad for all these different types of tests that we're doing, you have to remember that people will feel differently on different levels of thyroid. So where one person might feel better, for instance, with a free T4 level of say, 1.2, another person won't feel good until they get to 1.89. And you have to take that into consideration because as long as it's within the range, and also understanding that the ranges will, you'll see the top of the range will sometimes be higher in some labs, you have to recognize that there's that variation. So it's not very standardized. It can't be standardized because people are anomalous. People don't tend to be the same. The other problem, as I said, is this problem with doctors relying on the TSH test as the gold standard for thyroid hormone to see whether or not you're producing. And TSH levels can be artificially lowered by stress, among other things. So if somebody's going through a very stressful period and they go in and they've got all these thyroid symptoms because stress makes thyroid worse, they test the TSH, and it's nice and low. It's like 1, or it's 1.5 or something. They say, well, that's fine. That's well within the levels of what we like to see. You're fine, and that's as far as they go. But what's happening is that the stress hormones and the mechanisms of the way that they, you know, the sort of domino effect of stress hormones, it will affect the level of TSH. It will artificially lower TSH. So it won't be accurate. The other thing about TSH is that it's actually telling you how the pituitary thyroid axis is working. And if you're using any thyroid treatment at all, and you're taking a thyroid hormone that contains T3, which is an active form of thyroid, that will also lower your TSH. There are other issues, like fluctuating hormone levels may change the accuracy of the pituitary thyroid axis, because the pituitary is also responsible for follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone and all these different hormones that are acting as signalers for the master hormone. So TSH, although it may be I think there's additional research going on that's beginning to show that the TSH itself has some value. So TSH is probably somewhat valuable to do, but it may be useless if a person is going through andropause or menopause or going through a particularly stressful period. What might be more reliable is to check the free, not total, levels of the thyroid hormones that are made. And what I mean by this is your total levels are not taking into consideration the fact that there will be a varying amount of thyroid hormone binding globulin. This stuff, depending on the amount of it, will cause thyroid hormone to be bound to the protein in the blood and not circulating freely to get to the tissues. So what you want to check is the unbound or free, F-R-E-E, levels of the thyroid hormones. The thyroid produces T4, like the number 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, T4, that's what the thyroid produces. And then it's really important that your body is able to turn that T4 into the active form of thyroid, which is T3. So you also want to see the free levels of T3. So you want to test free T4 and free T3. And that will often give you a fairly accurate idea of what's happening in terms of the levels of hormone that are actually available to the tissue sites. Now, in addition, you may have a whole group of other symptoms that are quite different from the ones that I initially mentioned. These symptoms will be things like a really high pulse. Maybe your pulse, instead of being somewhere between 60 and maybe 75 or something, maybe it's more like 110. And you or another individual that you're close to that you're observing is sweating, their palms are moist, they may have a lot of gastrointestinal symptoms, including actual vomiting, and rapid weight loss, tremors. If they hold their hands out, their hands are shaking, and they feel very nervous and anxious. Well, these are symptoms of hyperthyroidism, too much thyroid. The first thing to do is to check for antibodies. There are two different reasons for there to be a hyperthyroid reaction. Both of them may be connected to antibody reactions, but there's a third reason that may not be, which is that sometimes people will have a transient hyperthyroid reaction due to a really bad infection. But it can also happen as a result of Hashimoto's, of having antibodies attack the thyroid. There are additional specific thyroid antibodies, though, that cause Graves' disease. I'm sure you've all heard of Graves, G-R-A-V-E-S. And Graves is the one that is known to cause ocular disfigurement where people's eyes actually begin to bulge out, and it can cause some damage to the eye if it's not treated. Now, Graves, as I said, it's very important to actually check the antibodies, because there are a lot of different antibody systems, and the doctor should check. By this point, you should be seeing someone who's either an internist or an endocrinologist who specializes in thyroid, because you're going to need someone to order very specifically the right antibody tests. And you do want to know whether it's Hashimoto's or Graves, because a Hashimoto's hyperthyroid will be treated differently and may disappear on its own. Although if the hyperthyroid reaction is very severe, it's very important either way to treat the thyroid to stop this high production of thyroid hormone, because it's throwing the body into a catabolic state. Catabolic means that the body is burning its own tissues. And you can't leave this to go on, because you begin to burn you use up your bone, your muscle. You have tremendous loss of bone and muscle. The treatment of choice in conventional medicine is using either anti-thyroid medications, which stun the thyroid and stop the production of thyroid, or they use radioactive iodine, or they remove the thyroid. Of those three, I would highly recommend that if somebody goes the conventional route, that they use the anti-thyroid medications, even if they cause some side effects, because radiation, as we know from the research of John Goffman, who is a very eminent retired professor emeritus and someone who worked in the nuclear industry, who then became a anti-nuclear activist, there is no safe dose of radiation. He knows this from 2 5-year studies that he did. And in fact, a lot of thyroid problems are precipitated and caused by early exposure to radiation, where people were given x-rays without thyroid collars, or people were actually x-raying their face for acne, and the thyroid was never protected. Or even if the thyroid is protected to some extent, you can actually kill the thyroid with the radiation. But in addition, radiation has been shown, according to Goffman's studies, which I respect a great deal, to not only cause cancer, but to increase the incidence of ischemic heart disease. So radiation should be used only in extreme emergencies. And if you can use another method for treating the thyroid, you don't want to risk the development of a thyroid cancer. So an anti-thyroid medication would be preferable to radiation. And from my observation, also to having the thyroid removed, unless there is absolutely no other choice, since the thyroid is not a useless gland, and removing it does cause people to have other symptoms, even though you replace the hormone. There's a kind of je ne sais quoi that having the gland there is going to feel differently for people, rather than having it removed, which is pretty it's pretty impactful and stressful. Now, there are some alternative doctors who are doing research and doing work using higher dose iodine and iodide to treat hyperthyroidism, because if you use a lot of iodine or iodide, you can also paralyze and stop a hyperthyroid condition. Now, this is never something for you to do at home by yourself. This should always be done in the presence of a physician who's monitoring you, because you don't want to cause an additional hyperthyroid reaction. So it has to be done very delicately, because iodine and iodide can cause either to happen depending on which kind of antibodies are there. So please do not experiment with this yourself. The only other sort of natural treatments would be that there's been research that shows that the amino acid carnitine actually in hyperthyroid situations will stabilize the thyroid and normalize the function in high doses. You know, so several grams of carnitine on an empty stomach several times a day. The other thing would be to use high thiocyanates. So these are the natural substances in vegetables, mostly cruciferous vegetables, that in very high doses also paralyzes the thyroid. And there are some physicians who are able to get their hands on capsules of this, either cruciferous vegetables in capsules, or there is a West African doctor named OG. It's O-G, O-J-I, O-G, Ogbe, A-B, ooh, I never can spell, I never get his name right, but it's O-G Ogbe, and he actually did do a show with him some time ago, so you probably could look him up on my website, yourownhealthandfitness.com. His last name is spelled with an A, and he, I think he produces and sells thiocyanate capsules from natural sources. So I want to take a brief musical break, and when I come back, I want to talk about... Oh, one other thing quickly to mention is that in the case of Graves' disease, it can be caused by smoking and stress. Smoking and stress will set off a Graves' disease reaction in vulnerable people, so you have to be very cautious about smoking and stress if you have any susceptibility or if it runs in your family or if you begin to develop it. So I'm going to take a brief musical break. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm doing another thyroid show. And when I come back, I'm going to talk about some other considerations that can cause the thyroid to be an issue, other health problems. So please stay with me. I'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show with you alone today talking about thyroid and why it's so difficult for people to get their thyroids treated and what sorts of considerations one might have when approaching a doctor and asking for the thyroid to be worked up. As you may recall, I wanted to mention that if you miss parts of today's show or want to get a copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772, or you can go to the website. It's yourownhealthandfitness.com, and you will also find information there on the Progressive Health Observer, the newsletter. I'm trying to think whether I want to go on to... I think I'll wait to go on to making suggestions about different thyroid types of thyroid hormone. I wanted to say medication, but it's confusing. It's actually thyroid hormone. But before I do that, I want to just explain to you that there are other conditions that will cause sort of thyroid problems as a kind of downstream effect. And so if you have any of these other conditions, it's important to kind of look at the thyroid. Now, I already mentioned other autoimmune thyroid problems. Other autoimmune problems can cause, in addition, thyroid autoimmune problems. So lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and any of these other autoimmune problems. But interestingly, diabetes... When people have trouble controlling their blood sugar, have potentially even very low insulin levels or very high insulin levels, there's very often a thyroid component, and we don't know what comes first. One thing that I think we do know is that there's a lot of puzzling going on about why it is that there's such a sort of epidemic of thyroid problems in, certainly in the U.S. It's really kind of worldwide, and there are different reasons for it in different places. You see it a lot in countries where there's not enough iodine, you know, because insufficient iodine in the diet. And then in the U.S. we added iodine to salt. So you have to work pretty hard to avoid iodine if you don't want it, because it's in multivitamins and it's in regular salt. But if you are using sea salt that's not iodized and you don't eat any fish or any sea vegetables at all, iodine can get low, and you need the right amount of iodine. Too little and your thyroid doesn't function right because it has to uptake iodine to produce the thyroid hormone and for the thyroid hormone to be converted to T3. But in fact, too much iodine and you will blow the thyroid out. So when people get sort of crazy using a lot of iodine supplementation with kelp and they're using iodine salt and they're also getting it in their vitamins, sometimes they overdose and it can influence the thyroid. But diabetes is a condition that people need to look at. I would say also chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia. People are often misdiagnosed. In fact, sometimes they have Lyme disease, but also sometimes they have Hashimoto's or thyroiditis. So it's important to check the thyroid. The other condition is, as I just mentioned, nutrient deficiencies of various sorts. So too much or too little iodine. Methylation problems where people are not able to utilize folic acid properly. They don't have the reductase and they're not methylating it. So they have very low B12. They have not enough B6. The folic acid is very low. These people are always also more prone to high homocysteine levels. You may have heard about homocysteine. It's a impaired metabolism of methionine, which is an amino acid. It's actually what's happening is that your body is moving along a detoxification pathway to make glutathione, and it gets to the methionine and it gets to homocysteine and it doesn't sort of keep going. It gets stuck at the homocysteine and it creates a lot of high homocysteine levels. And this is treatable by using B12, B6, folic acid, sometimes trimethylglycine. But thyroid also lowers homocysteine. There's a really nice study that I found. Let's see if it's close here. Yeah, there was a study that was done in 1999, and let's see, can I figure out where this was reported on? I'm not immediately. It looks like it was published in a magazine called Thyroid, if that's possible, by probably a journal. And it showed that when people had low thyroid hormone, that their homocysteine levels were higher, and when they gave them the right amount of thyroid hormone, it lowered the homocysteine levels. Low protein, the thyroid really likes having enough protein. And remember, again, there's this connection between stress and the thyroid, and there's also a connection between protein and the thyroid, and stress, because if you don't, what we heard in the editorial that Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett said is that too much stress and too much starch will cause metabolic syndrome. And so that's, again, a low thyroid, I'm getting my words mixed up, a low protein problem. People who are sort of afraid of protein have to remember that protein makes up almost all of your living tissues along with saturated fat. I mean, it's really quite amazing how much of your body is made from saturated fat and protein. And in order to repair the tissues, you need protein to do that. So having too little protein in the diet is a stressor to the thyroid. And, if your blood sugars are out of control, that's going to be a stressor too. Over-exercising, oddly enough, and not resting enough is another stress. So appropriate exercise is good, but you need more thyroid hormone to exercise more. So people who maybe are not, their nutrient balance is not robust enough, and they're exercising really, really hard, they're peak performance athletes, and they're not getting enough rest, may actually suppress their thyroid if they're not careful. So you always want to keep tabs on your thyroid with that too, if you see shifts in the way that you feel. Insomnia, which actually is a symptom of low thyroid. You cannot sleep if you don't have enough thyroid hormone, but not being able to sleep is a form of stress, so that makes your thyroid worse. Too many thiocyanates, like I said, there are all vegetables and all beans and nuts and seeds, anything that propagates plants, and also, as I said, a lot of vegetables have substances in them that are extremely healthy in the right amounts when they're balanced with enough protein. But if they're eaten without the inclusion of enough balancing things, like a little bit of animal protein, even if you're a vegetarian, even adding a little bit of eggs or cheese, if you tolerate those things, will help with this, but if you overdose on thiocyanates or these nutrient blockers that are in beans and seeds and nuts, these phytates, the trypsin, these are all things that are in there to prevent these things that produce plants, seeds and nuts and beans and stuff like that, from being eaten to extinction. So they are very high in soy. And soy is also a phytoestrogen. It's a plant estrogen. Now, some years back, it was thought that having a plant estrogen knock the native estrogens off the receptor sites would be a good thing, because it was thought that our natural estrogens were causing cancer. Now it looks like the problem is that if estrogen is not balanced with progesterone and testosterone and all the other good hormones, DHEA and all that, and it gets out of control, and then is exposed to a lot of pollutants in the environment, that it can produce a metabolite that can cause cancer. But it's quite a lot of steps along the way. But native estrogens are protective also of the body in terms of cancer, and all the native hormones are, and they don't need to be pushed off the receptors. In fact, there was a study on Japanese men in Hawaii who ate a lot of tofu all their lives, and at middle age they had dementia because the estrogens in the soy were blocking the native estrogens in the brain, which is how men think, is with estrogen. Is that ironic? Yes. So if you can, some people can eat soy, although people like Mike Fitzpatrick, who's a chemist he's in New Zealand, and he has done a whole raft of studies about the goitrogenic or thyroid blocking effects of soy, and has had lots of mail and contact emails and letters from people who are saying that they actually have gotten Hashimoto's or thyroid antibodies from eating too much soy. I guess what I would say is this: there are soy products out there that are organic. The ones that are more highly processed, the more fermented ones, are the safest ones. They should be used, if they're used at all, in very small amounts as a condiment and not as a main source of protein. But many people are allergic to soy, and many people can't eat it because of the thyroid issue. So it just makes sense to be cautious. And if you've been eating a lot of soy and you're having a lot of symptoms, to eliminate the soy for a while and see what happens. That may be one of your main problems right there. Smoking is, as we said before with Graves, is very harmful to thyroids in the neck. Chemicals in food and environmental toxins, particularly mercury and fluoride. Fluoride really interferes with all the good vitamins that protect the thyroid. Zinc is lowered by fluoride, for instance, and zinc is often very low in thyroid patients. The sex hormones need to be balanced, but they need thyroid to work. So if you check your sex hormones and they're out of ratio, getting them into ratio helps, but if the thyroid isn't working right, you're still going to have a problem. Remember, I talked about the estrogen to progesterone ratio. Also, DHEA is often very low with people with thyroid problems. Now, I want to go on and talk about some more nutrients in a moment, but let me move on to choosing a thyroid product. Oh, I realized I made a little note in my margin here to talk about the adrenal cortex, the adrenals. So before I say anything about thyroid hormone, let me just back up for one moment. It's very important to talk about the relationship between thyroid and the adrenals, because it's often the case that people will think that they have a thyroid problem, when actually what's happening is that they have chronically high stress hormones or chronically low stress hormones, and this is impacting on the ability of the thyroid. The body can't convert the T4 to T3. People get a sort of tissue resistance to the thyroid, but it's actually an adrenal problem, and sometimes can be corrected with just enough rest, enough recovery, and in the worst case scenario, even adding in, well, you start first with nutrients. You know, protein is very important for adrenal health, keeping the blood sugars even, not drinking a lot of stimulants, making sure that you're sleeping well, which is, as I said, difficult if you have a functional thyroid problem. You may need for a period of time to take some extra thyroid, particularly if the cortisol or stress hormones that are released from the adrenal gland are too high, then you absolutely do need thyroid to lower it. But if your cortisol levels are low, if they're very low, and these can be tested with saliva tests, then you're actually going to need to be careful with thyroid, because thyroid tends to lower cortisol, which is part of the way it makes you helps you sleep, and it's part of the way it reduces blood pressure. When people have really high blood pressure, sometimes their cortisol levels are high and their thyroid is too low. So there's a balancing act between the adrenal and the thyroid, and you do need to get it right. All I'm cautioning you about is, you don't want to think about thyroid without thinking about the adrenal and watching it, because if you over-treat the thyroid, the adrenals will underproduce, and then you'll have another problem on your hands, and you'll still feel cold. You'll still have cold hands and feet. Your body temperature will be, when you take your temperature, will still be low with low thyroid or low adrenal. So the adrenals have to be balanced as well. And some of it is good nutrients. Some people use very small amounts of licorice if their adrenals are very, very low, not if they're high. Paying very close attention to their potassium intake when they take licorice, because sometimes that'll get lowered by the licorice. But just being very cautious with it and checking your blood pressure to make sure it's staying stable. When you see things kind of stabilize, you may be able to stop the licorice or just use some licorice tea once in a while, which is actually liquid cortisol, oddly enough. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show called Another Thyroid Show, talking about the ins and outs of how to get your thyroid treated properly. So choosing a thyroid replacement hormone product. Now, a reminder here. People always say to me, they say two things. One is they say, I don't want to take a medication. Well, first of all, it's not a medication. It's a hormone, and they're all bioidentical hormones. These are not, you're not going to have patented thyroid products. They're not on the market so far anyway. So except for an anti-thyroid medication used for lowering hyperthyroid conditions, all the thyroid hormone products on the market are bioidentical, whether they're desiccated pork or somebody somewhere is making cow, although I haven't been able to track it down. But they use pork because, believe it or not, pigs are remarkably close to us. Actually, I'm not surprised, except I think pigs are generally sweeter, but in nature. But bioidentical pork or the other hormone that's available, these other ones, are going to be synthesized in the lab, but they're identical to the T4. The synthesized stuff is the so-called synthetic thyroid, which is sometimes called Synthroid or Levothroid. Levothyroxin is actually T4. And the pork, the desiccated pork thyroid, is indeed a combination of a whole bunch of thyroid hormones, mostly T3 and T4. Remember, T3 is the active form. And there's a little bit of T1 and some other ones in there, too. So this is a little bit confusing which one to take. Should you take the desiccated pork thyroid or should you take the synthetic thyroid? Pork thyroid is more like actually eating the incomplete animal. I realize that this may be unpleasant for vegetarians to think about, and vegetarians may have to use a combination of synthetic T4 and T3 to avoid this, but in the old days when people were eating animals, they ate the glands and got the thyroid with the glands. So when you use desiccated pork thyroid, you're getting a combination of thyroid hormones that are intrinsic to the gland, including some extra T3. So one of the other problems with synthetic forms of T4, which is the T4 alone, where it doesn't have T3, is that there are synthetic binders also that people can react to, and natural binders, which people can react to. They put a lot of binders in synthetic T4, and the binders that they add to pork thyroid are far less. They use far fewer. They use a full-strength pork, desiccated pork thyroid, usually, at least in Armour brand, ARMOUR, which is the oldest form of thyroid hormone replacement that's been around forever. and that brand still is really one of the better brands in my own practice. What I see is that people consistently do better on Armour Thyroid than any other thyroid hormone replacement, and they also find that it's the cheapest. It's remarkably inexpensive to buy as well. Ironically, compounding pharmacies have reported to people that I'm close to in the field that they themselves prefer to see their own family members use Armour Thyroid than using thyroid that gets compounded into capsules, because it's very tricky to compound thyroid hormone for people who are sensitive to binders in capsules. It's very tricky to deliver thyroid hormone. So Armour Thyroid, again, A-R-M-O-U-R, is the best tolerated for people who are sensitive and people in general because of its combination of hormones. There are other brands of pork thyroid on the market, and unfortunately some of them do add things like lactose to them. So again, the Armour brand will be the least reactive. There is one called Natureroid, which makes it sound like it's a more natural form of pork thyroid, but it's not, and it in fact has had several recalls because it came out in doses that were about half the strength of what was reported on the bottle. In fact, there have been recalls on almost all the products that are out there on the market, with Armour Thyroid having the least or none, even though many doctors still persist in thinking that pork thyroid is more variable than synthetic. Indeed, it's the other way around. One of the things that can happen using pork thyroid is that because it contributes some T3, which is the active form of thyroid, if people take it and take nothing else, which is fine, initially what they'll see in their lab tests is that their T3, if you test for the T3 and T4 separately in the free forms, will get a little bit high, and the extra T3 may suppress not only TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, which makes it look like your thyroid is not doing what it's supposed to do, but in fact it is. It will also kind of drive down the T4. This is not a problem unless people have symptoms of feeling way too jittery, but you can adjust your dose. So in general, my experience has been that the pork thyroid, particularly the Armour Thyroid, seems to be less variable, less reactive, and in fact actually replace some of the natural milieu of thyroid in very subtle ways, and makes people tend to thrive better, tends to be a better product. Now, it's also the case with T4 that only one product on the market has a binder in it which is less of a problem for people with food allergies, and that's Levoxyl, L-E-V-O-X-Y-L. Now, this is not an ad for Levoxyl. It just happens that this is the only company who finally figured out that people who take thyroid may be allergic to lactose or acacia or some of these other things. Now, why they add these allergic binders to T4 products like Synthroid or Levothyroid, I don't know. But if you're having a problem taking one of these T4 preparations that you've gotten, or a generic, it may be the binders, and it may be better to use the Levoxyl. Now, here's another problem with Levoxyl. Levoxyl has only one pill that's white. The rest of them have colorings, and the colorings, when I did some research, are all bioactive substances that can cause a toxic reaction to sensitive people. So the only dose that's white is a 50 microgram capsule, but it's produced so it can be split in half into 25 micrograms. So you may end up taking more pills. It may be more expensive, but it's a cleaner form of thyroid for people who are sensitive. Some people have their thyroid compounded into capsules with very benign binders in them, but compounding is not a no-brainer, and I've heard stories where compounders made the T4 capsules, and a patient took them, and after 6 weeks suddenly felt not well and checked their thyroid levels, and in fact the thyroid was tanked. So compounding is tricky. They all vary slightly, and you just have to keep tabs on what you're feeling. If you feel like you're not getting better, keep in mind that when you take T4 alone, you may in fact need T3. You need to check both levels in your tests and your follow-ups. T4 levels are very slow to hit your blood. It's going to take 4 to 6 weeks before you feel a total effect. So you may change your dose and then not know for 6 weeks. It's very difficult. T3 goes in and out of your system in about 5 days. so it's a little faster. But you want to keep these two balanced because too much T3, for instance, people taking pork and nothing else sometimes feel a little speeded up because the T3 is so active. So you have to keep tabs on your levels and be very moderate and slow. One of the reasons for knowing whether or not you have Hashimoto's is your treatment really is going to be to put the gland at rest so that your antibodies are not destroying your thyroid and you don't have inflammation. But it always has to be handled very slowly, because when you start treating a thyroid when it's inflamed, you get more thyroid symptoms. So the reason for knowing whether you have Hashimoto's is to find out whether to go slowly or whether you can go more quickly. But if in doubt, go slowly. The other things to think about with thyroid treatment and testing are that people have problems with certain nutrients when their thyroid is not working right. Sensitivities vary, but some people can't take iodine at all. They can't be exposed to it at all. Some people have trouble with copper, but copper is an important nutrient. So you have to be very careful with multivitamins to see what you're sensitive to or not. You have to think about methylation again, B vitamins, B12, B6, folic acid. Vitamins in general get low with thyroid because the gut isn't working very well. Thyroid patients don't convert beta-carotene to vitamin A, so their vitamin A gets low. They're better off with a fish oil version of vitamin A, just a fish oil A and D. Always take A and D at the same time, and in fact, D gets low in people with thyroid and is very important. Also, the sun is very important because the sun stimulates the thyroid. Selenium, terribly important in the conversion of T4 to T3. Selenium deficiencies are a big problem. Magnesium is a big problem with thyroid patients. Often they're constipated because there's not enough. Vitamin C has to be added in. Extra manganese, vitamin E. Zinc is often lowered in thyroid problems, and it's lowered by fluoride. So the copper to zinc ratio is often off. As I said, carnitine is very important for thyroid patients. It can normalize a hyperthyroid condition, and it can make a hypothyroid condition work. You just feel better because your energy cells work better. Thyroid, in fact, also plays a very important role in carnitine metabolism. Carnitine's in red meat, but it can be taken in capsules if you can't bear to eat red meat. It influences your level of triglycerides, your blood fats. So it's a very important nutrient. It's very heart protective, along with coenzyme Q10. It's a lot of information coming at you. The most important thing is to make sure that you're being tested properly, to make sure your physician is giving you a total test, that you're not doing a partial test, that when you start on a thyroid hormone, that you start slowly is my recommendation. It's easier to raise thyroid levels than to lower them. And if you get into a hyperthyroid condition, it's unpleasant, although usually it can be resolved pretty quickly. But it's easier, as I said, to go slowly on your way up than to take a lot of it at once and then need to go down. That's the reason for knowing whether or not you have antibodies attacking your thyroid. I'm sure I've forgotten some extremely important issue here, but I, again, have also given you far too much information. But the thyroid, again, is one of the first things to check. It really should be a standard check, and it should not just be a TSH. It should be a free T3 and a free T4. That's my opinion in any case. I'm Lena Berman. I want to thank you for listening. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, the Progressive Health Observer, a news commentary alternative to big box medicine, a free stream of this week's show, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.